Why don't we get started with our next series of lectures? I'd first like to, again, draw attention to our corporate sponsors, the Ogden Clinic, the National Kidney Foundation of Utah, and the Utah Academy of Family Physicians. Also like to mention that this lecture series has a sponsor, Dr. Stephen F. Johnson and Dean Johnson, DMD, as well as Val Johnson, and this is in memory of their father, Vern Johnson, and also the Joseph R. Watson MD Memorial Fund. As Dr. Brown mentioned during the business meeting, that sponsorship has been a real big part of the ability that we've had to put on this meeting and pay for the expenses, and these organizations and sponsorship of various lectures have been very crucial part of that. So we're now honored to have our family medicine residents from McKady Hospital do their presentations, their annual presentations. And I know that there are some from past years that are here gloating in the lack of their own personal intensity, given that these guys are probably all excited. But anyway, just to begin, they've worked very hard on these projects, and I think that you'll find a fair number of them are taking advantage of our move to electronic medical record keeping and the ability to mine data. That is the main purpose for, I guess, having electronic medical records in the first place, that in communication. But as you'll see, a lot of the data mining that they've been able to do was allow them to center their project around local data that has pertinence not only to their clinic, but to the Ogden area in general. So with that said, I will turn it over to Dr. Ben Brennan, who will first come up and present his case, and they'll each introduce themselves, tell you a little bit about them, where they're going, and we'll get on from there.
Good morning. My name is Ben Brennan. I'm a third-year resident at McKady Hospital. I grew up in New Hampshire, came here to Utah for schooling, went to the University of Utah for medical school. I have a month and a half, 6 weeks left of residency, and I will be going to Visalia, California. Perfect. I have no disclosures to give out. Today, I'm just going to initially talk about the determinants of patient satisfaction, patient satisfaction surveys, and reimbursement. And then we'll look at some patient satisfaction data, and then how that correlates with prescribing of opioids and antibiotics. So I'd like to open with a case presentation. 49-year-old female with a history of 30-pack years of smoking with COPD comes in with a chief complaint of back pain, chronic low back pain, on opioids. She's run out of opioids about a week ago. Should be noted that she has been seen in the ER a couple times in the last month for respiratory distress. Patient comes in for pain control. After looking at all of her labs, her imaging, there's nothing concerning. I then tell the patient that at this point, opioids would not be the best treatment for chronic low back pain, and that for her, her respiratory distress could be complicated by her opioid prescriptions. So I offer her a non-opioid pain medications, a physical therapy referral, and the patient becomes upset and leaves. So one of the questions is, should satisfaction change how I prescribe medications? I think that's a difficult question to answer. Hopefully by the end of this presentation, we'll have a better idea. So the impetus for this talk, when I was a first-year resident, I was talking to one of the attendings, and he had difficulties with patients getting upset when they didn't receive antibiotics or opioid prescriptions, despite him explaining to them why they didn't need those. And as a young physician, I was concerned to what extent my medical decision making would be influenced by non-medical things such as patient expectations, patient satisfaction, and reimbursement. So I want to look to see if there's a correlation between patient satisfaction scores, payment, and then prescribing of opioids and antibiotics. So why are patient satisfaction scores, why are those so important? CMS created HCAHPS scores. HCAHPS scores are an evaluation of a patient's recent hospitalization to incentivize physicians and hospitals to increase their HCAHPS scores. These are all based on HCAHPS surveys, which evaluates a patient's recent hospitalization. To incentivize physicians, they've tied payment to this. So approximately 1.5% of payment is withheld from hospitals. This is equivalent to about $1.1 billion in withheld money. So this can be recouped through, in part, by patient satisfaction scores or HCAHPS scores. These are publicly posted online. For McKinney Hospital, the one that I work for, their overall HCAHPS score is about 79%, which is average for Utah. CMS has created an outpatient version of this survey called CGCAHPS scores. CGCAHPS scores are not required at this point for all physicians in the outpatient setting. However, by about 2017, they may be required for all and will likely have payment attached to this. So Intermountain, in an effort to be ahead of the game, has created their own patient satisfaction survey called the Patient Experience Survey, which they've recently renamed. This is a 26-question survey that evaluates a patient's recent encounter with a primary care physician or outpatient physician. Questions vary from how helpful the receptionist was, how easy it was to get an appointment with a physician. There are questions specifically on the patient-physician relationship, on nursing staff, how clean the building was, and such. So I took patient satisfaction data from 2013 from all outpatient clinics. This totaled to be about 22,000 surveys. We looked at this and compared this to prescribing of opioids and antibiotics. Initially, I looked at mean satisfaction scores. So when you look at all patients or the control, the mean satisfaction score is about 4.51. When you look at prescribing of opioids and antibiotics, you can see that the mean satisfaction score are all about the same, showing that prescribing of opioids and antibiotics do not change mean satisfaction scores. A recent study in, I think, March of this year from the ER shows similar data, that opioid prescribing does not change patient satisfaction scores. So another question is, does this change payment? To understand this, you have to understand the way Intermountain does payment. They have something called the Value Recognition Program. This is based on top box scores. A top box score, this is a sample question from the patient experience survey. A top box score is based on what a patient states. You have 1 through 5, 1 being poor, 5 being excellent. The top box score is exactly that. It's the top box or the highest score a physician can receive, which happens to be a 5. Payment or reimbursement for patient experience surveys is based on that. For outpatient physicians, if you get a 50% or higher top box score, then you will get a bonus. In other words, if you have 50% or greater 5s, you will receive your reimbursement, or I should say bonus. For the ER and Instacare, that happens to be 40%. That difference is likely due to the patient-physician relationship. So I wanted to look at top box scores in terms of prescribing. When you look at this, the y-axis is the average percentage of top box scores. The x-axis is the different groups of patients. The first group, this is all patients, this is the control. The second group, these are patients who did not receive an opioid. I'm sorry, these are patients who did not receive an antibiotic prescription. The last group, or the gray group, these are patients who received an antibiotic prescription. As you can see, the top box scores are not are all the same, suggesting that prescribing of antibiotics in general does not change patient satisfaction or top box scores, and thus will not change payment. So patients with an expectation for an antibiotic. We looked at patients who have respiratory infection as defined with these. These are patients, we chose infections that are likely be viral, meaning that you likely would not need an antibiotic for these. So how does this change? How does this change satisfaction? So again, we looked at top box scores of patients who received an antibiotic with a respiratory infection and those who didn't. The first column are all patients, our control. The second column, this is patients with a respiratory infection who did not receive an antibiotic. As you can see, it's about a 3% difference in top box score. Then you look at patients who had an infection, a respiratory infection, who received an antibiotic. That's about the same as the control. Although there's a difference, this was not found to be statistically significant. Although there is a trend, those patients who might have an increased expectation for an antibiotic have decreased top box scores. So then, how would this affect patients who obtain an opioid? We looked at top box scores, or average top box scores, for patients who received opioids. Looked at all patients again, this is the control. We looked at all patients who didn't receive an opioid, and then we looked at all patients who received an opioid despite the diagnosis they came in with. As you can see, there's an increase of about 4.5% in top box scores. This was found to be statistically significant and can play a role in payment. So again, we looked at expectation. Patients with a diagnosis of back pain will likely have a higher expectation for opioid prescriptions. So we looked at patients who had back pain as defined here. We looked at their top box scores. So again, the first column is our control. The second column is patients who have a diagnosis of back pain who did not receive an opioid. There's a decrease of 4% in their top box score. When you look at patients who had diagnosed with back pain received an opioid, theirs is 4% greater than the control. An 8% difference with patients who had back pain who didn't receive an opioid, which was found to be statistically significant and suggests that payment can be, that opioid prescribing can change top box scores and play a role in your payment. So the real question is, will this affect my payment? So there are about 2.4% of patients who are diagnosed with back pain and receive an opioid. So let's just say that I took all those patients and I said, you know what, I don't care what your symptoms are, I don't care what your scans are, I'm not going to give you an opioid. How would that change my top box score overall? There's an 8% difference between the patients who had a diagnosis of back pain and did not receive an opioid prescription. If you take the product of those two numbers, you have an overall decrease in your top box score of 0.19%. Meaning, in order for you not to get paid or get reimbursement as an Intermountain physician, your overall top box score would have to be 50.18%. For outpatient Intermountain physicians, their overall top box score on average is 61.7%, suggesting that this plays little effect in your payment. So back to our patient, our 49-year-old with COPD, chronic low back pain. Should her satisfaction change how I prescribe medications? You know what? I would have to say no. If this patient were surveyed, she would likely not give a 5. She would likely give something lower. However, the question is, what is most important? Is the goal to have 100% top box scores? I don't think so. The goal is to treat patients well and have them be part of the decision making, not to make all patients happy. Although that is a goal, to have patients happy, it is not the ultimate. So in conclusion, top box scores can change with the prescribing of opioids in general. Patient expectations may play a role in top box scores for opioid and antibiotic prescribing. Top box scores have a potential to affect reimbursement. However, this is to a small extent. And patients should not worry about reimbursement due to top box scores. Acknowledgements, I'd like to thank Marion Gorder, who did a lot of the statistics and data gathering. Linnea Baggett from corporate office helped me understand how payment is done, and then Norm Anderson.